It's simple. It's dumb. It's the podcast. Very first episode of It's Simple, It's Dumb, It's the Podcast. What began in 2020 as a Twitter project dedicated to ranking Jason Lytle songs has now transformed into a podcast solely focused on discussing Jason's music with friends and fans of Jason's. In this episode, we speak with Ben Bridwell, singer, songwriter, musician with Band of Horses. While Ben happens to be a huge fan of Jason's music, Ben also has a long-standing friendship with Jason, which made him the ideal guest to kick off this series. The interview touches upon several interesting subjects such as being on tour with Jason, working with Jason in the studio, and of course, Ben's favorite song from Jason's catalog. Without further delay, here's my conversation with Ben Bridwell. What were the circumstances in which you recall first hearing Jason's music?
The first time I heard Jason's music, I was living in Seattle in this like rent-controlled little tiny studio. It had like a, you know, like a combination stovetop and then a refrigerator underneath and a shared bathroom on each floor in Seattle's like Pike Place Market area. And I had just begun to become like a real person, kind of. This was like 98. And I'd been homeless and kind of kicking around for most of my teenage years. And I guess I was about 20 now. And I had my first apartment to myself finally. And I had a job at the Crocodile Cafe in Seattle where bands like Granddaddy played. I finally had money to like go buy records and stuff. And, I've always been music obsessed and, I would buy like compilation CDs or records, to find new bands all the time. I don't know if you remember, but back then, like that was one of the best ways to find some of these, talented artists that are undiscovered around the country or around the world that you'd never hear of otherwise. And I picked up this one disc because it had some bands on there that I already knew about. Like it's called Zum Audio Volume 2. I don't even know if there's a Volume 1. It had like Songs Ohio on it, Duster, Modest Mouse, Windsor for the Derby, Rex, Dianoga, all these bands that I already liked. And I didn't know about Granddaddy yet, but they had this one track on there that was really short, like under 2 minutes long, but it was captivating as soon as it started. It was different from all the other songs on the comp. I fell in love immediately. I remember the feeling of sitting there being like, who is this? Like, what is this? Because it was so, you know, we had the Built to Spills and the Flaming Lipses and the Modest Mouses, you know, guys that were singing in a bit of a higher register thing. But this was something, I couldn't really compare it to those bands. And I was immediately like, just smitten. Then once I heard that track, I went and got everything I could by them, any single or 7-inch. They had like an EP called A Pretty Little Mess by this one band or something like that, that had some of the earlier stuff But I think Under the Western Freeway was right around then, at least. And so I dove in head first then.
So you were a legitimate Granddaddy super fan even before Software Slump, which I think is the jumping point in for a lot of Granddaddy fans, to be honest.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And my friends, I mean, anyone I could get to listen to it, to them, I was immediately like a devotee, yeah.
So do you have any other memories about Granddaddy's music from those times when you hadn't met Jason yet, when you were just a fan?
My dad and I are really close, and my dad is a bit of a fan of the music that I do, and not overbearing by any means, but you know, he likes to go to the shows, he likes to hear demos, that kind of, he loves to be involved in any way he can, and he's such a music fan himself, and I wouldn't be crap if it weren't for him showing me when I was a very young person, you know, all the music that that he loved. But there was a time I was living out west, and he flew me home to help fix up the house as we were selling, like, the family home. He was living there by himself, and I know he wanted to spend time with me more than anything, but you know, it was under the guise of let's paint and fix up the house, and you can, you know, come home and see your old friends and stuff. And man, I believe like the day I got there, or maybe the next day, it was, you know, records used to come out on Tuesdays, and at least in the States, and Granddaddy's Someday came out, and he and I, like, just like we would do when I was a little kid, we'd go to the record store on release day and get whatever was coming out. I believe Radiohead's Hail to the Thief came out that day. Maybe a Wilco record came out that day, but the first record we put on, we bought like three of the top releases I know, Granddaddy being like our most excitable release. And dude, I listened to it today, just the first notes of Now It's On, the lead track on that album, and remembering how my dad and I were like in the car and just like speechless. Click. It remains like maybe my favorite album of theirs, not just because I love the songs, but because of the connection that I made with my dad over that. And we listened to that record front to back, I mean, ad nauseum, while we were painting the walls of this house. And to this day, my dad and I still listen to that record and, you know, almost get misty-eyed with just the memories from it.
As I mentioned in the intro, Ben, you have a long-standing friendship with Jason. How did you come about initially meeting him and becoming such good friends?
I had to research it, actually. The first time I met Jason was in Bozeman, Montana, at a club called the Filling Station, November 17th of 2007. Yeah, we were touring. We had like our first, like we had like a bus finally. And we were playing there. I didn't even know that Jason lived in Bozeman. But he had kind of escaped. I think he had escaped Modesto for the wilds and the nature of and majesty of Montana. And dude, we were out by our bus, which was still such a novelty. Like, we couldn't believe we had a bus. And Jason like walked up to us, I think in the parking lot, and introduced himself, which is seems very not like Jason. But he did. He had come to the show. I believe he was by himself, and came up and said hello. And Creighton, the drummer in our band, and I basically crapped ourselves. Like, what in the world? You're like our favorite. You're one of our musical heroes. How the hell do you even know about us? That kind of thing. Oh, man. And he, you know, then he came. It's funny. So we like, let's go on the bus and chat, you know, let's go in the back lounge and have a beer or something, you know? And he was his usual kind of, he's like the first social distancer or something, you know? He's very much himself, and he's not trying to like impress anybody, and he's not trying to be overly, you know, outgoing. So it also kind of puts us in a, I remember feeling like on my toes, feeling like we got to fill the air with some words. he definitely enjoys spending time with himself. And I believe he does at times get very frustrated by the rest of the human race. But we also share a lot of qualities of being introverted as well. And we became friends very quickly from there.
I believe that the earliest collaboration between Band of Horses and Jason was the Townes Van Zandt cover, Don't You Take It Too Bad. Did that song come about during one of the two stretches that Band of Horses and Jason had toured together?
No, we just always kept in touch. And I started that cover, and I just never, honestly, I have to do way too many things. I'm like, oh, I don't want to go outside and I'll be in like some hotel room or something on tour. I'm like, I need a reason to stay in all day. So I'm going to cover this song. And I left it kind of undone and shared it with Jason. He's like, I'll pick up the slack here and finish it for you kind of thing. But we weren't on the same tour together. Shit, we've been doing that kind of thing for years upon years now, where it's like he and I would bounce ideas off of each other, whether it's a cover or plenty of Christmas songs, mm-hmm. or even our own material. Just to see if something's worth even pursuing. But yeah, no, I'd say the first thing that we got each other's email addresses, I think, that night in Bozeman, and always kept in touch and would send funny songs, especially back and forth. Anything that was funny, that we were making, is always fun to share with Jason, because he does have such a very good sense of humor, and he's very funny. That's where the relationship really kind of grew. And then I believe it was the Admiral Radley tour that we were able to, get them to come out with us in the States. We never really lost touch, and we still haven't.
As I mentioned earlier, Band of Horses toured with Jason a couple of times. Given what we know about Jason's dislike for the repetition and the structure of touring, I'm curious what you remember about those touring experiences.
It's interesting. The first one we did with Adrad, they were in their own vehicle. It was a band. And so we were, you know, you have like separate dressing rooms kind of thing, and I remember we did bring like a quarter pipe to bring so Creighton and Jason could skate, you know, between sound checks or whatever. We were obviously pandering to our musical hero. That was, you know, you're just kind of, we're both kind of in our own worlds making sure we're doing our jobs correctly. So I don't recall that being as communal as the second tour that we did together. He was, I believe it was for his solo album, Department of Disappearance, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
And he was solo, but with, he had a side dude with him as well named Rusty, and Rusty slept on our crew bus and Jason slept on the band bus. because we only had like one bunk per bus to spare. So they're very different experiences, touring with Jason in his own kind of entity, and then all of a sudden now he was in, we're all living together on, you know, a moving little hotel. And if you want to know what that's like, it's up and down. You don't know what you're going to get. It's, I mean, and I've lived with Jason now, like whether it be on tour or in like residential studio environments enough that it's like, okay, what's Jason feeling like today? Is he going to be like, let's get up and go? Or is it going to be like, no one even look at me, or I'll, you know, I'll give you a stare that will break your heart.
Okay, let's move to the studio. You just kind of hinted at it a little bit, but the fifth studio album, Why Are You Okay? You obviously tabbed Jason to produce that record. How'd that come about? What were you looking for? I know you'd worked with a few different producers prior to that. What was kind of the impetus behind that request and that decision?
Let's see. Well, I felt like it was my turn to choose like our path, I guess, and not be guided by management or label suggestions kind of thing. And Jason was the top of my list. And so I asked him if he'd be interested in doing that. And he was at least, at least curious of the project. So I kind of baited my hook with, why don't we go hang out and discuss, you know, show each other some songs that we're thinking of working on, yours and mine, and just kind of hang out and see if we could, you know, if we could work together or if it's worth it. And so he was like, that's funny, because there's a studio I'd really like to check out in Stinson Beach. And I was like, okay, I'll fly out there. And there was this place right next to the studio, and the studio is called the Panoramic Studio in Stinson, I believe. And right next to it was this like old water, like barrel house, you know, a cylindrical, like looks like a silo or something, that's been converted into a tiny little, like an Airbnb basically. And so we went out there. I flew out. He drove up from, I don't even know where he was living then, maybe Portland at the time. But we spent a few days in there talking about music, and I don't think we played each other a single track of the songs that we were working on. All we did was chat about other music and playing each other people's songs, because I think, like myself, Jason is a fan, a big time fan of music first and foremost. And in the two or three days that we spent together there, I don't think we ever once played each other a song that we had been working on. But we obviously got along well enough and loved that studio that we were like, okay, this is a thing. Let's move towards that.
We all know Jason is a studio rat. I mean, he plays every instrument, he records everything himself, and he can take however much time when he's doing it all by himself in his own studio. But what's it like to work with him in the studio at the time? Does he get frustrated? Does he lighten it up a little bit, knowing that it's not his entire project? It's the burden's not all on his shoulders.
That's a really good question. At times, you'll want to remind him that it's not his album. Because he can't help but try to do everything himself. And so there are times where it's like, are we allowed to go into the room today? Because Jason's going to ask for, like, you know, one joke. And I don't mean to drag him on this, because I know he's going to hear this. But one of the jokes we'd have is Jason always asking, can I get a keyboard track? Can I get a keyboard track? And he's just like, always asking if he can. So he's always shaping and filling spaces with what he hears, and he can't help it. He's like a savant that way. He's got such a brilliant musical mind that he can't help but hear things a certain way at times. He can be pliable, but it's out of his comfort zone. So that studio rat, that lone wolf quality about him, also, at least for this project, which might have been his first time producing another band for all I know, you could tell that he hadn't quite broken out of that mindset.
Do you find it easier to work with a friend in a situation like that, where they're more apt to give you honest feedback, or would the opposite actually hold true, where perhaps they might be more prone to hold back a bit to avoid hurt feelings?
That's a really good question, because there's so many aspects of that you like thank your lucky stars that it's this person that's making sure you're not guided down the wrong path, or that you're staying true to, you know, to the musical, like, kind of statement that's true to you. But in another way, it can get complicated, especially when someone is so much a loner that you can't quite tell what they're thinking at times, and you don't want to disrupt any sort of friendship vibes. It was very good and sometimes scary, because you don't know which eggshells to walk on or which ones to stomp on. He's been such a great friend over the years, and I'd hate for this to sound like I'm like bitching about his like kind of cantankerous nature or something like that. I love that he, all the things that he brings to the table, his love of music, not just creating music, and his love of ELO for one. There's so many things, there's so many facets of his personality that are just beautiful, and he's so funny. And yes, he's grumpy sometimes, but it's one of the best friendships I've made in my adult life.
All right. So what is your favorite Jason Lytle song, Ben?
Okay. My favorite Jason Lytle song is The Ghost of 1672 that came out on that compilation, as I mentioned earlier. It's when you're such a fan of someone's body of work, it is kind of hard to pinpoint what's my favorite or whatever. It's hard to play favorites. So the reason I chose this song is because it was the one that I was led into the granddaddy universe. The one that, you know, like the smell from the kitchen that led me to the meal. It opened up a whole world of beautiful music to me, and inspiration and friendship to Jason and everything. I choose it because not only do I love the song anyways, but it's the starting point for me. And if it hadn't been for that compilation and for that song sneaking in there like that, well, I would know a whole lot less if it weren't for that. I mean, it is a quick song, but there's a lot going on in there. If you, if the listeners at home or wherever they may be, get a chance to rock it, it is a lot of stuff packed into like a good minute and a half. Like the thing starts off with this like nice dry, snare and, hi-hat and kick drum. That's simple but almost funky in its simplicity, and like the synth brass, like maybe a, you know, not quite a trumpet and not a tuba. I'm not sure what you'd call that sound is he was using, but I remember from the get being like, whoa, this sounds like it's just one sustained note going on there. I was like, oh, this sounds like like Dudley Moore and you know, what is it, Arthur on the Rocks or something like that, where he's like walking around Manhattan or something. It sounds kind of like metropolitan, and then you hear these like vibraphones going, it's like, what in the world, kind of like Tasty Feast of like audio do we have going on here?
There's a ghost, and you're his host, but you're never gonna know. Stoves, ovens, radar ranges, and electric things that can change egg yolks and bread into French toast.
And then, well, you know, then you hear Jason's vocal, and I'm like, oh, that's, man, that's the kind of stuff I like. Man, I like that register of, like, you know, the higher kind of register like that, like, say your Neil Youngs, your Doug Marshes, your Wayne Coynes, that kind of stuff was really my wheelhouse. And shit, I tried to emulate it myself over the years. Then you hear how clever the lyrics are, and that someone's kind of baiting you. And Jason does that well. He baits you into this very sincere and very funny, but not trying to obscure the two, kind of dichotomy that is a great staple of Granddaddy's and his solo work that you can't really fake. And I mean, I've never been able to figure out how to do it that well. So all of that combined within, you know, about 2 minutes, I was like kind of left, you know, mouth agape, kind of, what the hell did I just hear? Like, what was that? So oh, and the background vocal, I listened to it today, and I was like, this reminds me of, I don't know if you ever heard this, but Sonic Youth recorded a Carpenters cover for this compilation album in the early 90s, like If I Was a Carpenter or something like that, and they covered Superstar, and it had this really, Thurston Moore had this really ghostly vocal, and Jason's background vocal reminded me of that, because I loved that Sonic Youth cover so much, and I was like, oh, that sounds like Thurston or something in the background. What, it was just so, well, enticing, but also a bit confusing, like what are the ingredients in this recipe, everyone?
French toast, all the things that he hopes that you're gonna use most, all the things that he hopes that you're gonna use most.
Yeah, the song itself, I do like the song. It's so quirky, and I can't tell if it's sarcastic or sincere at the same time, you know? It's very strange.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, and sometimes you can tell Jason's sincerity from his, you know, his humor, but sometimes I don't think he can help what words need to be said at the time. I love the end, the last line where it's like, it makes, like, the ghost is sad, I guess. It makes him go boo-hoo. It makes him go boo. Because he's a ghost. I think that's funny, dude. I think that's really funny. And humor's okay. It's okay to not know if someone's being sincere or just taking the piss. But thank God for art, you know?
All the brightly, lidly, lighted technological advances that he never got the chance to use when he was one of you back in 72. 1672.
Well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Special thanks to Ben Bridwell for taking the time to talk with me and taking a chance on a podcast first episode. If it didn't already come across in the audio, Ben let me know how excited he was to participate because of how important it was to shine a light on Jason's music in this way. Join us in 2 weeks for our second episode, where we'll speak to a different guest about their experiences with Jason and their love of Jason's music. If you have any feedback, suggestions for future guests, or any other thoughts, feel free to reach out through social media.